The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is December 3rd, 2014, and we are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best, and our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. Today's Wednesday, and our special guest is Bud Jeffries of StrongerMan.com, and tonight we're going to talk about building big, massive legs. And if you know anything about Bud, I mean, Bud nailed the 1,000-pound dead-stop squat. So I figure this guy ought to know a little bit about some leg training. So, Bud, welcome to Motivation and Muscle.
Thanks, man. Have me back on.
I'm glad to have you. How do we want to start here? Do we want to jump right into the power rack? What do you want to do?
Well, if you got some thoughts on that, doesn't matter. I mean, I think we obviously, you and I both lean toward squats in a power rack as probably the best way to build legs. And I have some very specific reasons for why, but I think, you know, you could sort of just do this whole thing and say, hey, listen, just squat, and that's the deal. There's no...
Yep. Yeah. You're right. You're right, obviously. But
I wrote an article recently about that, about different types of squats, and people make such a huge hype over different ones and that kind of thing. I'll tell you what I believe. Fundamentally, you're not going to build the biggest legs you can possibly build without some type of significant squats. And mm-hmm. I'm not talking about little playweight squats that most people think they're doing these days. And you're like, okay, this is not a bag against CrossFit. Because when you look at what they do, they're doing their thing, and that's fine. And I applaud the fact that they have gotten people into doing squats and deadlifts and,
right,
you know, that kind of thing. But they set a very low standard for what's achievable in squats. People really can, you know, the thing about squats, it really has less to do with the particular style of squat and more to do with the intensity with which you attack it. And then also more to do with learning the technique that specifically works for you. I actually have a little series I'm doing about, you know, what it takes to really get really top end, great strength. And one of the things I haven't gotten to yet, but I'm going to talk about, is constant refinement of technique. Okay, so I've been squatting for, let's see, almost 7 years.
Yep.
And I'm still constantly, every time I do it, focusing on doing it right.
Yep.
You know? Now, here's another thing that people mess up. Okay, they hold themselves back to no weight, period, until they think they can do it extra, ultra, super perfect, and everybody they ask on the internet, even the 14-year-olds who cyber judge from their mom's basement, tell them it's the best squat ever.
Yep.
And because of that, they never squat over 135, but it's the prettiest, most awesome squat ever. Well, okay, if you look at some of the best squats in the history of lifting, they're not always the prettiest lift that ever happened when they're at a maximum intensity. You know what I'm saying? When you're at your absolute ragged edge, competition max or whatever, it's often, you know, it's a little slow. Sometimes there's a little form break. Sometimes there's, you know, you see people get a little forward or a little off and they gut it out or what. I'm not saying you need to ride the ragged edge to the point that your form is crappy. You got to, and because what did I just say? Perfection of technique is a long-term, lifetime thing. Attention to detail. You can never outdo it. However, okay, little things when you're really working as hard as you can are not necessarily technique breaks. They're breaks in strength. For instance, for me in squats, okay, I always had very strong legs, strong hips, and I had trouble keeping my chest and torso up with it. So my legs would shoot out of the hole, and I'd have to gut it out with my back to get the rest of the lift. So occasionally that's kind of a tough thing. And even as much work as I did over, you know, like I said, almost 27 years, It still is a little tough for me sometimes. Occasionally, my legs just literally shoot up higher, and then, you know, it's hard for my torso to keep up. But that doesn't – that's not an I don't know what I'm doing, I'm being reckless.
Right.
That's a specific build to my body and trying to do things to keep that up. I really do like the power rack squat, and I'll give you a bunch of reasons, okay? First of all, you can train that lift with a level of intensity that you can train almost nothing else because it requires absolutely no – there's no spotters and no possible way for the weight to kill you. Can't fall on you. Can't – you know, just – it ain't going to happen. Can't fall on you unless your rack just explodes or something or whatever, you know.
Yep.
You know, and as long as you have any kind of a decent rack, it doesn't do that. Now, a couple of awesome things it really does, and it does – I kind of agree with Pavel on this, and I kind of don't. Pavel Sosselin likes this particular style of squat, the same dead stop start, you know, squat.
Yep. Yep.
Because it helps to control leg size. But I think that's a very individual thing. It can be a way to squat that can get your legs very strong. If you, you know, keep your volume low and if you do certain things, and if you're a guy who is dieting and trying to stay smaller, it may help you do that. However, I did those squats almost exclusively for certainly the last real heavy years of my squatting and a lot in the last few years. And I got to the biggest legs I ever got. I got 35 and when I was close to, I was about 385 pounds. I had 35 plus inch thighs.
That's huge.
So, you know, and I built up to squatting 1,000 pounds. Now, there's the thing that's going to make the biggest difference in your leg size. You want to build big legs, put some weight on your squat. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to perfecting technique and finding the individual form for you because your stance, your width of foot, your toe turn, your how you hold the bar on your shoulders is going to be a very individual thing. Good form, however, is universal. Breaking at the hips first if you start at the bottom or driving, you know, with the shoulders up to keep an upright torso as you come up is definitely good form. Good form is universal, but individuality is good, what makes it perfect. Okay. Now,
let me ask you one question, though, quick, because this is interesting. When you squatted 1,000 pounds years ago, and now, you know, like you said, you've hit 800, and, you know, I'm sure you can probably go more than that if you want to start really diving into it, you know, exclusively. But you're not doing that now, obviously. Right. But how much have you changed, you think? Let's forget about, well, we probably got to say that because you've lost so much weight since that time.
Right.
But how is your squat, has your squat changed because of the weight loss, or have you just evolved, so to speak, where what you did at the 1,000, your style then, is your style similar, or have you changed that up totally now?
No, stylistically, I'm very little bit of difference, but I think you got to take some other factors into account for that, okay?
I'm
a little probably less, maybe not quite as wide.
Yeah.
I did squat before, so mine might be just a hair narrower stance.
Okay.
And I, you know, I have so much a broader focus right now.
Yeah, definitely.
But like people ask me all the time, well, could you squat 1,000 pounds a day, or are you, you know, here's what they don't realize. Okay, a couple of things, and here's where the weight loss thing is good, bad, misleading, yes, no, I don't, you know, there's so many things to say here. Okay, so here's what I want to say about this. I squatted 1,000 pounds at nearly 400 pounds, okay?
Okay.
385,
yep.
Okay? Now, today, and this is, 10, 11, I don't know, years later, maybe more.
Yeah.
I have squatted 800 pounds.
Okay.
Okay, actually 810, starting from the bottom at a body weight of about 285, 290.
Right.
Okay, so I'm 100 pounds less. But now here's what they don't realize. Okay. I spent nearly 2 years rehabbing a knee injury that I couldn't really do a lot of squatting and I certainly couldn't do anything. I couldn't do any full range heavy at all. Could only do some real partial stuff. And then I had to work, you know, spend a lot of time. So the weight loss is going to be a little bit, it's going to look like I lost more weight on the squat than I did, but you got to understand that during the time I lost that weight, I couldn't actually work the exercise that I would have been working to begin with. So that, you see what I'm saying? It's a little bit misleading.
No, exactly. Yeah.
And you have to look at the other stuff, okay? Because now I'm maintaining now for 5 years, 100 pounds body weight loss, or right in that range, okay?
Yeah.
And I have hit personal records lifetime, no matter what my size was or age, on about 80% of the lifts I've ever done.
Yeah.
Now, here's the big thing, okay? So the real difference I don't think I lost, and what people are just misleading. It says, well, I lost this weight, therefore I lost that much weight on the lift. No, what I lost is leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I got
you. What I lost is leverage, especially doing a raw squat that way. You know what I'm saying? There's just a
ton. Sure.
You have to create all the ability to support that weight. And I'm literally stronger on lifts I shouldn't be stronger at, but I don't have the leverage on certain lifts that just require the pure body mass. Now, one thing people always say, oh, well, fat doesn't help you move weight.
No, yeah.
It doesn't, but interstitial muscle,
yes,
fat as well as leverage creation as well as torso leverage, it doesn't help you lift weights, but on a couple of the big lifts,
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily kill you either. It doesn't necessarily, saying? You just, I just don't, today, I think on a per muscle fiber capita contractile capacity, I'm as strong or stronger. And I do some things today that I think are better as far as muscle recruitment, but I don't have the leverage to, essentially at one time I was a D9 bulldozer. I was a huge monster, thing that was made to move earth. Well, now I'm a D8 bulldozer, but I get the gas mileage of a Ford Prius. So I'm what I'm saying? I'm working on another situation there, but so on a very, very close level, I can move almost everything, do all the same lifts. One or two things though, I'm off on leverage. I just don't know if I'll ever gain the leverage at a lighter body weight to do.
But you're also a healthier guy now, number one, and you and I both know there aren't many people walking around doing an 8-10 raw dead stop squat. Think about that, just that number alone.
Oh no, well, I mean, back when I did 1,000, the closest I saw anybody do it was around 800. There wasn't anybody, nobody had done it, nobody was really doing that. I still actually haven't seen, the only guy I've even seen get close, there was one guy who did something similar, pretty close to what I did back then. Robert Wilkinson, pretty close. If not, he probably could do the lift. I would imagine, especially if he trained on it specially a little bit, because he's just a huge, huge monster squat guy. It's a different thing, but again, it's a specialization thing too, a little bit.
Yeah.
Because the average guy who squats 800 pounds, the first time he tries pure dead stop stuff, probably going to get hammered in the 600, plus range.
Without a doubt.
But if he spends some time building up to the specialty of that squat, he'll get right back to it. So, for instance, for me today, because I spent so much time doing dead stop work, I'm optimized to the ability to work without a concentric contraction, to work with or eccentric contraction, to work without the stretch shortening cycle and the things that create rebound. So because of that, it's not like I walked up and just squat 900 pounds if I walked it out and did it that way.
Right.
Because I'm my top end starting strength, which is one of the reasons I think is the best type of squat, my ability to create movement from nothing, that is absolute maximum or very close to that. For me, if you ask me, that's the best way to work this in the real world. Because everything you do in the real world doesn't work off of a rebound, or certainly not a full squat.
Exactly.
Certainly not. When you go to lean down to pick up a stone, or when you go to do things that it ain't like you. Somebody hands you the stone and you drop down and then bound back up. It doesn't work that way. And now nothing wrong with that either. There's nothing wrong. It's just.
No, but you're looking. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's a question of what you think is the best way. I just happen to think that particular style is the best way. But, look at the box squats, the stuff that Louis Simmons guys do. Look at the way, the Lillibridge guys do their squats today. And, guys like Chris Duffin and different guys. You're talking about some monster squatters out there right now. Different stuff. Everybody's getting similar results. You just got little differences in nuances in how they do it, and maybe one guy uses wraps and maybe another guy doesn't, and I like to do it from the bottom, and you know, I will stick up for that, saying, hey, I think the bottom is the hardest way. And
I do too.
And probably because of that, it's one of the most result producing ways, but again, it's all, you know, it's all good. And I expanded a little bit into, you know, nowadays I do a few different types of squats more. Just because I want to have some different types of leg development. I found that, doing things from the bottom is perfect for low rep work, but
yep.
a little bit unwieldy for high rep work.
Yeah.
You know, it can be. I mean, obviously it's just as good if you wanted to do, say, 20 rep sets.
Yeah.
And you want to start every rep from the bottom, that's fine. That's certainly a thing, you know. If you're going to talk about building big legs and total leg development, you know, I think there's other things that need to be taken into consideration. The first building block is some type of a hardcore, in my opinion, power stance. I'm not a huge fan of the Olympic stance squat.
Okay.
But lots of guys are. And here's why. I think most people don't have the body to do it without a lot of knee stress. People do if you can perfect it. If you're a guy who can really sit his hips back and even in an Olympic narrow stance, not really overdrive the knees forward, it's okay. But I kind of agree with Louis Simmons talked about that. He said, I can take a wide stance squatter and he'll get a lot of carryover to a narrow stance. But a narrow stance squatter won't necessarily get the carryover to a wide stance, because it's not just about legs; it's about hips and involvement as well.
Yes.
So I think I'm a fan of a wider stance squat. Now that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, I told you I wrote that article about squats, and I kind of poked fun at everybody, and that was the point because I started with the Olympic lifter guys because, no offense, I love some of my friends who do that, but there's some self-righteous so's and so's about how they lift as far as criticizing the rest of the world.
I know.
That's all cool. It doesn't make a difference to me. You know, but don't call the rest of us infidels because we don't do it the same way you do.
Exactly.
There's room to live and let live in that whole thing. But I also have seen just as bad. I think there's a real place for playing around with, experimenting with stance, and for doing some things that are maybe the opposite of what you normally do. But I've also seen people, and you've seen it too, especially with the advent of the monolift.
Absolutely.
That guys and people squat with a stance that's like ultra super, you know, like I'm a wide stance squatter, but these guys make me look narrow. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, you know, their feet are minimum 4 foot plus width across from each other. You're talking about super wide. And I kind of think that becomes more of a, this is an optimized way for me to move the weight because I can distance I move it. But as far as from a developmental standpoint, I don't know that, you know, I think there's a plus and minus to either side. For instance, a lot of the old time strongman guys would tell you to do crap like squat on your toes or squat with your feet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And I think that, you know, again, anything that gives you unique positions of strength and give you unique positions of mobility, but I would never advise you to do squats on toes or squats with your feet touching as your main power style, the same as I wouldn't advise you to do a squat in a full split as your main power style. There has to be some intelligence about how you put things together. I do think most people will be the strongest with a moderately wide stance because that's how you're going to get the most even, powerful activation of quad, hip, hamstring, abs, back, and everything you need to do together. That's going to give you the best leverage. Now, some people are going to argue that you should use lower leverage exercises because it works the muscle harder. I disagree. I think you're optimizing one way or the other. So if you squat 400 pounds with an Olympic stance or 500 pounds with a power stance, I think you're stronger from using the power stance, and I think your muscular development is about the same, and I think modern science basically backs that up. As far as the EMG analysis and the things that go on where they can, you know, track an exercise and see what muscle actually worked the way we thought it does. Well, you know, the old thing used to be, well, if you squat narrow stance, it's all quads. If you squat, you know, wide stance, it's all hips. Well, reality is it's a little bit more, but it's still – everything's getting worked. So, you know, again, find the stance that works for you. But I also believe – I really do believe in this now, changing some things around – to keep things fresh, and as well as, you know, I've come to this place where I want to be strong in every possible position. So therefore, even though I do a lot of wide stance squats, I've added in a narrow stance squat that I use a lot recently.
Are you dead stopping those two, Bud?
No, I'm not, because I'm doing a lot more reps. I use that one for rep exercise. So I do actually do it two different ways. I do a belt squat that I do, and I use a relatively narrow stance for that.
Okay.
I also do a box squat that I like with a narrow stance. And the reason I do that is for two reasons. Now, one is very specific to just the lift itself, and the other is specific. Well, I mean, they're both specific to me, but they're specific to me in that one of them is specific to me. The other one is specific to just everybody. Doesn't, you know what I'm saying? The one of them applies to everybody. I do that because I do think you do get different developments from using different grips. There are different foot stances. There's no, you know, we have this argument about squats, about should we wide, should we close stance, but almost everybody benches with a wide grip and then does close grips.
Sure.
So what, you know, what's, I don't see the problem. You know what I'm saying? I see no problem in making it a big deal. Why not just do something that helps everything? So why not do some of it all? Pick one main style, and then pick some other things that work things in there. Now, I stance with a box for two different reasons, okay? Number one is the knee injury that I mentioned, okay?
Yep.
With a narrow stance with a box, that allows me to control the depth and keep my butt back while using a narrow stance and not push my knees forward. Mm-hmm. So it allows me to optimize the work without putting stress on the knee joint, okay? Mm-hmm. The way that I do belt squats is the same way. I actually use something to lean back a little bit to keep my shins vertically up and down, to keep pressure off my knees, and to throw all the pressure to my thighs. Okay. And now the other thing is and this is just sort of a personal thing to me, if I do super high reps of barbell squats with a wide stance, I tend to get a little bit of tendonitis on my internal thighs. And so to avoid that and still get the work, I just go to a more narrow stance. And and then that way I can work out some, you know, I can do some higher reps and do some of that. Because, you know, as important as the low rep stuff is for weight, because that's your foundation for everything, for strength, for mass. I think that's your foundation, especially for the drug-free guy. But high reps is also, you know, especially the legs. The legs have tremendous capacity for circulation as well as conditioning. And so, and you know, and one of the time honored techniques is high rep squats.
Yeah.
Which is about, you know, one of the most horrible things you can do, but again, good for you, you know?
What about as far as like, how many, if you're, now that you're doing a couple different movements, are you, you know, like, what are you putting together in a week as far as squatting goes? Because we know that you're doing a lot of other things along with us. So, are you squatting once a week, twice a week? You're rotating them like every 7 to 10 days. How are you going with them right now?
I go about every 7 to 10 days, but I tend to one in a 10-day period, I'll probably work a couple. I'll end up working legs twice.
Okay. Yeah.
But one time will be heavy, and then the other time will be some other type of a thing that may or may not be weighted, or may or may not be, like, I'll give you the stuff I'm doing for legs right now. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
I cycle in, different variations of, body weight squats for high reps.
Yeah.
So that's my lighter days. That's part of a pure conditioning emphasis day, but again, you got a massive blood pump going on with those things. So, you know, that's good for size, good for, you know, good for keeping your fat down. Now, the other stuff that I do that's not squat-related, which is also great for leg size, people don't talk about this, but, well, they do a little bit, but it is, I do a lot of sled pushing or pulling.
Okay? Gotcha.
Lately, I've been real fascinated with pushing a sled. I don't know why this is exactly. I think it is with a little bit with the way you lean your body into it. I can push a sled and have zero knee stress at all. But once in a while when I'm pulling, like if I put a harness on and pull one of my tires around or whatever, once in a while I do get a little bit of knee stress there. It has to be with the body angle, and you know, maybe it's just an individual thing. I know I can push a sled for crazy distances or amount and have literally no knee pain and no soreness. Now, here's why I think that's a great size builder, okay? And I kind of agree with, you know, Louis Simmons and those guys do a lot of sled dragging, that kind of thing. Kind of agree there. There's some smart stuff because you get a lot of conditioning, and there's no eccentric component to the movement, so you don't get sore. You don't get, I mean, you just don't get sore after, you know, maybe the first time, just because you're not used to the muscular movement. But from the actual things that build soreness in a muscle, you don't get sore. And for me, that's a big thing, because you can do it very often without creating problems.
Exactly. I'm gonna give you something I do that maybe you've done it before, or you might appreciate. I don't have a sled. I've got a sled where I can sit down and push against a big sandbag and pull it, or, you know, get behind it, you know, attach it to me and run with it. What I do, and I just did this by accident, you know, I got a number of spheres out in the driveway. I take a 240-pounder, and you're almost like in a bear crawl with it.
Right.
Push that, keep pushing that. Like, I push it 95 feet down, 95 feet back. Obviously, it might waver on you a little bit because my driveway isn't perfect. Right. That's a hell of a workout, man.
Oh, anything you get into those.
Yeah.
You stay in that position for an extended period of time.
Yes. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You're sliding it.
I'm pushing it in front of me.
Does it roll?
I'm rolling it right in front of me, and a nice.
Okay, because I got it. Okay.
But you know what the coolest thing about it is? Mm. I mean, it works your hands and your grip like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
Because you're constantly fighting to hold it straight. And I've been very lucky. I mean, I haven't had any injuries or anything like that with it. I love doing it. You know, once you get it going, it's like, you know, I don't want to let it go out in the street if a car was ever coming by and hit it and total the car. But I do that quite a bit. I love doing that. And I think it's a great strength feat myself.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great workout. I'll tell you something that's just as good with that is go backward.
Oh, yeah. I've gone side to side with it, but I've never gone backwards with it because, you know, I figure I'm going to fall on my ass, and the next thing you know, the stone's going to be on my face, you know. But go ahead.
Something I used to do with some of the fighters I trained is we had like a 150-pound ball, and, you know, what I'd have them do is get like in that bear crawl position, but what I'd have them do is shove it through their legs as hard as they could and make them roll as far as they can, and then they'd have to bear crawl backwards up to it again, and then keep going.
Yeah.
Bear crawl backwards, shove it again. Bear crawl backwards, shove it again. Bear crawl back. It's brutal. But it's, good work.
Oh, hell yeah. And I mean, you're building such power and explosion like that. Even when, you know, even when you're kind of fatigued, exhausted, and it feels like it's not even moving, I mean, you know, it's incredible for your body. So, I obviously you've done the same things. I like doing that. It's a lot of fun, and it's a good way. I like doing it after I've squatted real heavy. Maybe I'll go out the next day and do it just to kind of clean you up a little bit, and it always makes you mentally, I always feel pretty aggressive after I've got done with it, so it's kind of like I get a double hit off that thing.
Right. No, I agree. That's a good exercise, man. That's good stuff. Anything you can do that – because I'll tell you something that we don't think about. And this is, you know, sort of my perspective these days on that is, I used to be, you know, so weight centric that I don't think we get enough movement in the things I do. And I agree, you're going to build big, powerful legs, you must squat. But if you're going to build useful legs in the real world, you need to move.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to move, you know, you need to move both against weight as well as just move your body, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you some stuff I think is good. Something I've been doing recently is jumping.
Yep.
Doing quite a bit of jumping as well as rolling, that kind of thing. And you know, that's very specific to legs as well. But things that allow your body to move explosively, to move quickly, and to build some functional capacities into that leg size. Because it's awesome to have big legs. It's a whole other thing, you know. I know we know these guys, and I talk about this on a regular basis, but, you know, guys with 30-plus-inch thighs that can't walk to the mailbox, number one, without chafing and starting a fire, but number two, because they're, you know, they actually get tired, their legs get tired. Well, I, you know, it's great. It's the greatest thing in the world to be able to squat a huge weight, but if you can't walk for a pretty good distance, and how fit are you, you know?
Yeah, it's, you see these guys, if they bend over to tie their shoes, they're out of breath.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, You got to look at it this way. We've talked about putting the rubber to the road on many of these shows, and it's like you get out in the real world and something happens. Well, great, you squat 900, but if you got to defend yourself, you're good for about 15 seconds and you're down.
Yeah.
That's not really anything good. What do you get into? I mean, I know you did. I don't know what you're doing now. What about jump roping and stuff? Do you still like to do stuff like that? I mean, that's all body, but that, you know, that's leg related too. You get into doing any of that, bud?
That is probably one of the couple of, that's kind of on my list of things to master. I have always sucked at jumping rope. It's not something I ever did or got like none of this. It's a weird thing that, you know, I did martial arts and all that stuff, but just none of the places I ever went really emphasized. Yep. So I just never really got to doing it. But I do like to do, I'll tell you what I like to do that's kind of similar and, again, really easy on the body is jumping on a tire.
I've been watching you doing that lately.
Well, and here's what I mean. I don't necessarily mean that way, okay?
Because
what I was talking about in jumping before is I am jumping for height, jumping for distance, even jumping with some weights, adding something. And now I'm talking about really jumping for low reps as hard as you can.
Okay.
What I'm kind of talking about is that the tie boxers like to do this, is they'll get a smaller tire that's got some give to it, not like a big – so the tire you've seen they jump on is a 500-pound tire, and it's got some give but not very much.
Okay.
I'm talking about like a – now, for a guy my size, I actually sometimes will use a semi-tire, but even like a regular truck tire, that kind of thing. And you literally stand on it, and you use it like a rebounder.
Yeah.
So you just literally jump or jump up and down, and you move around, do maybe different foot combinations, kind of jump and kind of go around the tire a few times, that kind of thing. Often do it with hand combinations, and tie boxers like to do that a lot. I like that as a, you know, as that kind of a movement based thing. And again, the tire sort of absorbs all the momentum.
You're not beating your joints up.
Pounding on them, you know.
Yeah. What about, I mean, with the tire and everything, but now if we want to be specific, I mean, the squat to me takes everything, but there's a lot of other components too. What about like, are you a big believer in, you know, like direct hamstring work, or, you know, you'll have people say, well, I mean, I wouldn't do it, but I mean, if you wanted to do it, I'd use iron boots if I was going to do it, a leg extension with iron boots. Do you believe in hitting stuff directly too? Or not?
I feel like the squats that I'm doing,
yeah,
things around directly enough.
Okay.
It's been a long time since I've done anything like that. Now, I grew up, okay, in the sort of old school powerlifting, and they did some real basic bodybuilding. So, like, the first squat routine I ever did, all right, we would warm up, we would do one or two sets of five, and then we would do a set of five pause squats. And then we would go immediately, and once in a while we'd do leg presses, but everybody did a couple of sets of leg extensions and a couple of sets of leg curls, a couple of sets of calves. That was the basic leg routine every week. I did that for a year or 2 years without fail. And added a bunch of weight to my lifts, but I don't know how much the specific leg extension, leg curl stuff did. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like deadlifts kind of take care of most of your like direct hamstring work. Also, possibly I have and occasionally use like good mornings. I do this more as a mobility and as a back strengthener as well. But I'll tell you something that's a good hamstring exercise is reverse hyperextensions.
Yes.
I like those a lot. But right now I tend to do those for really high reps, and I feel like the combination of squats and deadlifts and doing them on a regular basis takes care of the quad and hamstring pretty much. But, I'm doing lots of exercises that have lots of hamstring emphasis as part of the whole overall package. So, like, one of the deadlifts that I do recently a lot is dumbbell deadlifts.
Okay.
And I like to do them with a band added because for the extra stress. And, that's essentially like a stiff leg deadlift. I mean, it's a very, very deep deadlift. So you're talking about lots of hamstring work. I haven't done – other than I will do this occasionally with a power wheel or with like the ab dolly type thing I do.
Yeah.
You can do a hamstring curl. Them by essentially putting the thing on your feet, lying on your back, and then pulling your hamstrings in. That's a great move. I don't do it very often, to be honest with you. I feel like just the pure squats and deadlifts, for the most part, does the job. But now, okay, got to remember, I do lots of kettlebell swings. I do lots of snatches. That's a lot of hamstring.
Yep.
Do a lot of sled pushing and pulling, and that's a lot of quad. Or if you backward with a sled, if you drag a sled backward, that's a lot of
ham right there.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like the basic stuff I do is covering it. I don't have a problem with it. A lot of the big lifters have a problem with it. It never really hurt me in any way. I just don't know how much it helped. It's hard to say.
Yeah. I like occasionally doing stiff legged off a plate. No more than body weight. And I also, because of the bicep, I'm careful of. If I do most of the deadlift, then obviously it's going to be with the barrels, or I'll use the farmer walk handles because then I can supinate the arm. And I can go pretty damn heavy on it. If I want to use straps, I can use them. I just kind of do that as a more of a precautionary thing, with that left bicep. I don't like stressing that thing out real hard at times. So those two have worked very well for me, too.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I think you got to take a lot of that you got to take into account the total amount of stress either. Like, and I'm not necessarily a believer that most things isolated.
Right.
And even most of the isolation stuff I do has some other component. When you do stiff legs like that, it's not just hamstring. You know what I'm saying? It's all back and hip.
Yep.
I just don't know. There is no true isolation. I don't know that there's even really much of a point in it.
No.
I don't know. I used to even not even believe that for like arms. Like I wouldn't even do isolated arm work, but now I think that's I think there is a place for it. So again, it depends on you. Okay. If leg curls or leg extensions particularly help you, or maybe they pay off for your purpose. Like for instance, if you happen to be a bodybuilder listening to this show, or you're probably not going to be able to get around doing leg extensions for, if you're going to get ready to stand on a stage and
absolutely.
I know I used to love the burn and the feel of them. I just don't know how much they were. I don't know how great they were.
What they did for you. The only thing I do when I do my hams, obviously, other than the stiff legged and, the regular deads and all that stuff. I really like those York iron boots, and I've got a couple original sets of those. And, I do it like Grimmick did, where I put a straight 1-inch bar through both of them. You can load plates on. And I'll tell you one thing. You do a leg curl with that thing, your hamstrings are there, I'll tell you that. And I've always been a big believer, like, with the squats. There's nothing like it, period. But I've always been a big believer in nailing hamstrings because, especially like the stones and stuff, man, I want my hams hitting my friggin' ankles if I could do that. I guess that's just a preference with me. I'm not using some sissy-ass machine. I'm using some old Hoffman, steel sandals, as they call them, loaded with some plates, and away I go. So I don't do them, every week. I might do them a couple times a month, three times a month. But they're a nice diversion at times, and I really like the feel of that, having to lay on your belly and, pull those legs up to your ass cheeks if you can get them up there,
Right, right. If you got to find a way that works for you or find a way – and like I said, anything that helps you move better. I know this. I've squatted for years and years and years and didn't do any running.
Yeah.
And then when I went back to running, every time I would try to run, I would pull a hamstring.
Yeah.
I started doing a ton of kettlebell swings, which is really an explosive hamstring stretch.
Yep.
That went away, and I never pulled I haven't pulled a hamstring since. So, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I do think
they work. Well, you got to find out what works for you. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you get such dividends though off a kettlebell more so than doing a hamstring curl with a set of York iron boots. But it's just whatever's there at the time. Now you have incorporated in everything you do. You're always doing kettlebell work, bud.
I'm doing something or something similar to those things just because swings and snatches are a regular part of my. Routine, very, very regular part of my routine, but it doesn't necessarily, like I spent a couple of years doing kettlebell work very, very, very regular every week without fail. these days I tend to switch. I tend to use the same kind of conditioning format, but I tend to switch things around more. So
yeah.
I might not do as many high rep swings as I used to, but I do a lot of high rep snatches now. I kind of progress to that. And then, mm-hmm. you know, something else that gives that same kind of combined muscular and cardio work together. I just don't think you're getting the health and ability you can possibly have without those. Now, mm-hmm. I do a lot of kettlebell pressing because that's the most comfortable way on my shoulders for me to do the press. The particular grip of a kettlebell is just the most comfortable way for me to do it. Although I'm about out of range, I've exhausted the weight of the kettlebells I got, so I got to either buy another bigger one. I got to find some way to strap a bulldog or something to it or whatever.
Absolutely. You have to start picking bulldozers up, man. That's what you'll have to do. Do you, how much do you think, I mean, we're going down the legs anyways, and, you know, having a knee injury and stuff, and I've had plenty of them too. What I mean, other than the squat, is there anything that you've used to build around the kneecap per se? You know, when you were down for that while too, what were you doing? I mean, other than what were you doing to keep your legs active and, you know, keep them sized wise as much as you could?
Well, I think a lot of the stuff you do will help keep leg size. Like I don't, you know, like the one thing we haven't talked about is partials, but I just think partials.
Yep. Well, let's do it.
Well, and here's what I mean. So during that time, I couldn't use a full range of motion. I did use a partial range of motion. I just used what range of motion I had. So I, you know, maybe not keep every bit of size, but you definitely can keep a lot of it. And I started to combine that with some other things to get that full range of motion back. I think the partials are big from a strength perspective, but man, I don't know. I sure gained a lot of size from them too. During that time, I'll tell you what I did, and this is going to sound, you know, a lot of people bag on it, whatever, from the hardcore world, but they're full of crap. They don't know what they're talking about. I did a couple of different yoga moves. There's a yoga pose called front warrior. Okay. Which is essentially like holding a low lunge.
Yep.
It's a lunge level on the first leg, and your back leg is straight instead of knee bent, but you're bent to about 90 degrees.
Yep.
You know what? I picked that up from John Hines from Monkey Bar Gyms, a buddy of mine. He specializes in Aishin's yoga, and that really, really ridiculously helped my knee as far as getting it back to firing and getting it back to working right and getting the range of motion where it would actually I never lost the ability to move it through the range of motion, but I lost the ability to make the muscles fire from the bottom position. I just couldn't – it just wouldn't push off.
Yeah.
So I think that's done a lot for keeping my knees healthy, that kind of thing. And something I really worked with for a while, this made a big difference too, is I started doing a lot of weighted wall sits.
Yep.
Because, again, that's easy on the joint but massively killer on the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can – you know, you can – the thing with that is you can perfectly position your knees so there's no joint stress. But the longer and harder and heavier you hold, the crazier it gets for your thighs.
Yep.
And you get – I don't know if I mentioned this before. You should see this. I'll have to see if I can find this video. I did when I was really specializing on that, I worked, you know, really hard. And we tried to go as heavy – you know, at least one set as long and heavy as I could go.
Sure.
And I did it one day. And we were kind of experimenting with this other thing where we would do things between sets. So I had three, four other guys training with me. And we had these rubber training knives from martial arts. So we'd actually knife fight between sets as part of a – So, part of it's just a game. Part of it, you know, is just fun, and you know, but it's great freaking cardio as well as, you know, I mean, let's talk about the real world. So, you know, your ability to move away from things. But okay, so I did this one time, and I held 800 pounds for like 2 minutes in a weight.
Whoa.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now let me tell you how I'm doing that. Okay, so I've got a wall that I'm literally sitting against, and what we did is we put a footboard there to dig my toes against. Okay,
yep.
So it was impossible for my toes to slip out in front of me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That way I can get my knees, I can get a perfect 90-degree bend between my shin and my knee, and I can actually get my shin more than 90 degrees if necessary without creating any knee stress on the kneecap or the joint in a bad way. And we took a log, I got my steel log,
and
I had my buddies who were training with me, they would push the log, they would put the log on my legs, I pull it up next to my hips so all the pressure is down on the hips, not on the knees.
Yep.
Then they just load the weight, and as soon as we got the weight loaded, we start to wash, and I just hold it until I couldn't hold it anymore, and then they'd take it away.
Ooh.
Never.
That, and you know, the discipline, you got to have such discipline to hold that.
Oh, it's brutal. But it's awesome. Yep. I actually think it contributed a huge amount to my, you know, being able to push off the bottom again, to my pure leg strength without having to, you know, with no stress. But
yeah.
What's funny about this, I mentioned the knife fighting thing, okay?
Yeah, I like that.
Because it was we're doing that. So I do this set, we take the weight off, and we jump up, and the whole idea is as soon as you get your set done, you're fatigued, now you got to fight.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like trying to fight them, but my legs are so hammered and so pumped, I'm walking in like concrete or something. Yeah. Like I can't, I'm literally... And, like, we fight for 3-4 minutes, and we videoed the whole thing. And, like, at the end, I tried to, like, I don't know what motivated this, but, like, I tried to throw a kick.
Yeah.
It looked like, it's, like, ridiculous. It looked like my leg went just completely dead, and I just whipped it about a foot off the ground. It was pathetic. It was,
yeah.
You can imagine how bad it looked. You know, it was hilarious looking on video. But, you know, again, the power from those isometric stuff. And I actually last year, this is killer for leg as well as size too, is to do an actual isometric squat in a rack. They're brutal. But man, the pump, you can't imagine. The pump is just ridiculous. I mean, you can't, you know, I mean, you
what?
Get the weight and get in the mid range or the low range and hold something, drive against the, you know,
set of rods, obviously. Yeah.
Second set of pins and do it like the old York style. Now, I don't like the way they – I like it, but I don't like the way they – I like for size, I like to hold the contraction longer. So yep. I'll go for, you know, try to get for 30 seconds or a minute or whatever I can do or whatever. But let me tell you something, 30 seconds into that, you're rethinking your life choices.
Without a doubt, man, because you're struggling mentally just to hold on. But, you know, once again, you hit the note, the mental note too. It's like isometrics, you know, pushing through rods – having something on your lap and trying to slam through something, that's what makes the good lifter. That's what makes the guy when he's walking strong out in the street, you know. I'll hit upon this again. This stuff is the best type of training. I know that we all do different things, but I, you know, other than stones, I enjoy that power rack more than anything I've ever done lifting weights. Period, and. I just think the whole thing with it is it's just too damn hard for most people, man. It's, you know, think about what you just said. You got 800 pounds on your, basically, as far back on your hips as possible, and you got to sit there until you're ready to give out. And like you're saying, you're rethinking your life. Then you try to get up and knife fight each other, and it's like, you know, at that point, you can hardly even move. You know, a 15-year-old could probably come over and knock you down. You wouldn't be able to stand up, man, straight. So, you know, it's a very interesting prospect. And, you know, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the isometrics and the holds and stuff you did. Because I think, you know, the people that listen to this show love all that stuff. So what else were you doing, bud? I mean, were you hitting – I mean, obviously, when you hurt the knee, you're probably at the top level with your isometrics or – coming off the rods dead, correct?
Well, when I first heard it, I was just actually heard it running sprints.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of, you know, I was in the middle of losing weight, and I was still squatting and stuff, but I wasn't really pushing it super hard. I was just sort of maintaining a level, and then I was running sprints and didn't have any – and had really no indication, and I don't know if I just hit a hole or just pulled something in my kneecap or whatever. I don't know, but I woke up the next day, and I couldn't bend my leg, and it was swollen. You know, it was just ruined. And then when it took 3 days for the swelling to go down, and when it finally did, I you know, I'm kind of testing it to see what's up, and I just couldn't fire off the bottom. So, you know, I let things rest. I worked in the range I could work in. And then later on when I started to rehabilitate, especially when I got into doing the yoga holds, the yoga is, okay, people think about yoga as it's just stretching. It's not. Yoga is actually isometric holds.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it is yoga is pulling yourself into a position or a posture and holding that position. And different ones have different thoughts on that. For instance, the Aishin's yoga that John Hines recommends is was sort of codified by this guy named Roger Aishin's, who was a Marine. And he, you know, and John had the same problem. John was a basketball strength coach and basketball player his whole life and was huge on jumping. and jumped to dunk a ball one day and landed badly on his knee and then couldn't move it. And totally lost the ability to do it and ended up meeting Roger and then, you know, helped rehabilitate him back to, you know, full health, being able to use his knee again. So I started noticing that you're holding these poses, and I was just looking for ways to work my legs that wouldn't be a lot of movement, wouldn't be a lot of joint, you know what I'm saying? Wouldn't be, because at that time I couldn't move it a lot. But I could do partials. I kept doing those, and I kept trying to stretch the range a little bit. I'd try to go a little deeper, you know, get and I started doing those holds, which is essentially especially the front warrior and side warrior poses, which is essentially holding a low lunge. And I noticed this, that, man, 30 seconds into that and then a minute into that, it started to suck. You really are working the muscle, but then my joint felt better. Was feeling lubricated without actually moving it a lot. So I did that for a while, and I said, well, let me try some different things. And a buddy of mine, Peter Ragnar, he had done in one of his books, he talked about doing a weighted wall sit, same as I did, except he held like 300, 320 pounds. He took a pair of 160-pound dumbbells, picked them up, put them on his legs. He essentially did the same thing. He just did it with the dumbbells without any help or whatever. And he held it for 5 minutes.
Whoa.
Okay, yeah, which is brutal, brutal, brutal. Okay, now you're also talking about his body weight is only like 180, 190 pounds. So, that's a pretty awesome feat. And so I got to experiment with that, and I got to looking at all the martial arts stuff. What do these guys do? Man, they're amazing kickers. They're amazing jumpers.
Yep.
They have very strong legs. And what do? They do a lot of low stance holding.
Yes.
So kind of Peter inspired me about that, and I got to experiment with that, and I got to say, well, let's just see what we can do. And then that was one of the major things that really influenced me to get heavily into isometrics, because I wasn't as good at it as I thought I should be. In other words, I got all this squat strength and all this stuff I'm doing, and I'm like, why am I not able to do what this guy who's who's half my size and 17 times my age, able to do? Why am I? And what I realize is it is a neglected component of strength. It's something we don't work. It's something we don't work it enough to. And you don't have this. Everybody has, when the strength you're just walking around in every day is isometric. When you do a squat, more muscles are working isometrically than there are than they're actually prime movers, because they're stabilizing and keeping the body there. So the strength is there, but when you really test it against real heavy weight or against real angles and different problems and stuff, you find that if you don't actually do some regular work on that, you're not as strong as you think you should be.
Absolutely.
So I started with it, messing around with it, and I the more I did it, the better my knees felt, and the better I could squat from a lower position without problems or without pain or with actually that having that work. So I built up to, I started with just body weight.
Yeah.
And just started holding it that way, and I would just hold a wall sit and go as long as I could and go. And now there's a little trick there that I think I told this in my in one of my isometrics DVDs. There's a trick. I didn't know people did this, but I had a friend who used to ride motocross in California in like the 70s, okay, when it was really big and when there was a lot of, and the European guys would come over and do it. And that's what those guys did to train, is they would do wall sits. Because you're in ride a motorcycle like that, you're essentially holding that position for for 20 or 30 minutes. You're holding it an extended period of time, and if they didn't train, they couldn't ride. But I didn't know they did this, and he kicked me into a little thing there. But this doesn't work with weight. Okay, it works when you're doing body weight to extend the time. Is what they would actually do is they would actively kind of shift from one leg to the other. They'd never come out of the position.
Okay.
But they would drop a little more weight to the right leg and then drop a little more weight to the left leg. A little more weight. You see what I mean? That allows you to extend the time, radically extend the time you can hold it, but and never come out of the position, but not in other words, the pressure never comes off, but you can shift it just enough to keep things going and extend your time period.
You would have to figure, Bud, that would be dynamic if you wanted to really incorporate that into your stone lifting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because you see a lot of these people, they're not – one thing I found is if you can't get down on a stone good, you'll get away with it for a little while, maybe, you know, not with good positioning, but you start getting into heavier and heavier stuff. They're not coming off the ground, or I hate to say it, you're going to have a dreaded injury that you might have to have surgery on, especially when you see these guys, which scares the hell out of me. You'll see them with their arms bent when they're pulling a spear off the ground. There's a great way to tear your bicep right off the bone, man. Right. You know, you need to have those arms extended, but that's a whole nother thing. No, but I definitely think the wall sitting, and I mean, I've done it. I think it's great. I mean, my mom goes to a gym and they have them all doing it, you know, and they're in their 60s, so, or early 70s. So, I mean, it's definitely somebody knows what they're doing when they talk with that. But, you know, what I think too, an observation, I mean, I'll say is, granted, whatever you hit with the hole and everything, but think about this too. If all that dead stop squatting probably saved you from just blowing your knee out, I mean, like permanently. That's what I said when I took that header that time where I bent my leg underneath my knee. It wasn't good. I could still squat light and all that out of the hole, but I attribute obviously taking good care of myself, but I attribute saving that knee from doing all those years of dead stop squatting and building a knee properly like that. That's how I see it with me, at least.
Well, I think that's a big issue there is, you know, doing things to take care of your knees, doing things to get, but people don't talk about that because that's one of the big raps people with squats get. Yeah. Oh, you're just going to tear your knees up. Well, not if you do it right.
Yeah.
And not only that, I mean, okay, now I'm kind of an extreme end example and you are too.
Yep.
Okay. The average person has no intention of trying to squat the weight that we're going to try to squat. Mm-hmm. So the average person squats have no damaging effect to the knee as long as they learn how to technically do it at all. Now, you and I might argue that, yeah, you might get a little bit of long-term damage because of the extreme weights.
Yes.
Because even done perfectly, that's a lot of stress on the body.
Yep.
But here's what they're not giving about that is, okay, yeah, so yeah, there's a little bit of damage here and there, but there's also so much more muscle and strength and tendon and joint being built that you're overcompensating any damage that you do with the total building of the joint itself.
I agree.
So yeah,
totally.
As long as you're doing, you know, I just think what's dumb is when people start having a problem that don't change.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're doing that and you're constantly getting an ache or constantly getting a problem, well, maybe you need to reevaluate the form you use. Maybe, you know, and like, that's one of the parts that I wrote that article about squats was like, listen, man, don't let anybody tell you this is the one righteous way to do this if it hurts you. If it hurts you, it's not the right way for you. You need to be smart about that and do some other things that really, you know, and do some stuff that minimizes joint stress and maximizes muscle strength.
Yeah. You know? But, you know, and then the old adage, and I saw things, I think it was a week or two ago, some yo-yo was writing again, you know, how lifting weights is terrible for you and you shouldn't be doing any of it because it's the same old shit. You know, it's like, you're going to destroy your joints, you know, ligaments, tendons, the whole thing, and it does nothing for you. And it's like, okay, you know, then go do whatever you want to do. Go on your Stairmaster and watch TV for an hour and a half and get nothing. You know, the way I look at it is like this. I still think physical culture is hands down the best thing ever. You know, and you can add all the other modalities you and I talk about on the show. But the bottom line is, and this is the bottom line of everything, weights are your foundation. That's what's holding the house up, okay? You can do every other thing, but if you have not built a good foundation to lay yourself on, you and I both know you got a short-lived career in this stuff if you want to take it to level after level after level like we like to do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you got to build a basic foundation of strength, and that applies to all this stuff. You want to build big legs, learn how to do the exercise right. Learn how to... You know, learn how it affects your body. Now, I'm going to argue you don't need to do it super heavy more than about once a week.
Right. No.
I like that mix of light and heavy. I like the mix of low and high reps. I think that covers all your bases, and especially when you add in some things that help you move, things that help you be explosive and fast and jump. I think that builds a leg that's big as well as powerful and usable. You know, and the thing is, it's way simpler that you don't. It's not like you have to do. They talk about these things and they try to tell you, oh well, you know, your squats, you do more weight on your squats, you won't be able to do anything else. Well, if you do 50 sets, probably, yeah, you won't be able to do anything.
Yeah, you won't be able to move. You'll be dead on your feet, man.
If you add 10 pounds to your squats and just do one set or one more set, it's probably not going to put you down. You know, they're probably not going to have to call the vet to have you put down after, you know, I mean, I don't know.
I wish they would put some of them down. I shouldn't say that, but, you know, call the vet and get, you know what the whole thing is too? It's like, stop the excuse wagon. You know, it's like, if something bothers you, go find out another way to do something else. And like you, when you referred to heavy and light, I'll be honest with you, I like that too, because, you know, let's face it, as much as you like pummeling yourself, and we all do, I mean, I'll admit it, I don't care, sometimes you just need that mentally to go do something else, because when you succeed at that next thing, I don't care if it's at 70% of your max or 50% of your max, you know what, when you go into that next workout, man, you're primed. I always use those lighter ones as primers for the next big one I got. I mean, I don't know if that's how you would word it, but that's how I do it, as a primer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
it gives you the ability to keep, you know, because.
Yeah. The gut it out.
And not be beat up from it.
Yeah. It's, I think this is, I'm not going to say it's simple, but I think if you keep things basic and you try to simplify everything you're doing with weight training, and it's going to take a long time. You got to have time in this stuff, or you've got to be attached to somebody that's been doing it for a long time, even though their methodology might be different than what you need, but you're getting educated the right way. You're being taught. You're building your foundation. If you don't do that, you're room for absolute problems, injuries, because even the best of us get injuries. We've all had them. If you're in this game real hard, you're going to get injuries. That's a fact of life. But if you're not involved in it like that, you're not going to be able to succeed with any of this either. And when things happen, like knee injuries or bicep tears or something like that, yeah, you can have them repaired if you got it. But what is the next step after you go to rehab? Because you and I both know most of the guys that are doing this stuff know more than the people that are rehabbing you. So where do you go after that? Because you're going to have a mental dilemma probably a little bit too, and now you got the physical hurdle you got to get over. So, you know, all this stuff with the partials, the rack, the lighter, all that, I think that's the best way to build the body if you should run up against problems like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. You got anything else with the legs you want to hit?
No, but I'll give you a quick, interesting thing to try.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you want to smoke your legs one time.
Sure.
Do your squats, but between sets of squats, do wall sits.
Oh.
I did one in rehabbing and building back up where I would do 60 seconds of wall sits and then immediately do a set of barbell squats.
Are we talking dead stop, bud?
Dead stop squats from the bottom. And I would definitely do either dead stops or box, because you don't want to do regular squats because you're very potentially going to collapse.
Yep.
Because you literally the leg fatigue can build up and to the point where you're like, yeah, I think this weight's coming up and it's not.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
I would do 5 to 7 sets and I'd try to do it as fast as possible. So I'd do 60 seconds wall sit, immediately over to the barbell and go right back to the wall. Or just load for the next set and then go right back to the wall.
Were you going pretty heavy with the squats single-wise, or do you keep them at a medium?
I went moderately heavy at that time because you got to remember I was rebuilding, but it was heavy for what I was doing at that moment. Yeah.
That's killer. That's brutal. Why don't you give us all the stuff about, you know, maximum functional there and let us know what's going on with that and any of the other stuff you got coming up or anything else you're involved in, and you know, give out the website and all that good stuff.
Right. All right. Well, the website is www.strongerman.com. That's our major website. You can also get me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those other things you gotta do. And just look straight for my name, Bud Jeffries, or strongerman.com. Either one will come up. And then we've got a brand new book out and has a couple of DVD companions that'll go with it. And the series is called Maximum Functional Mass. 195-page book. Got everything you, you know, a lot of the things we talked about tonight, because I give you very specific examples on what I personally do and why, and how to put it together in different set schemes and reps, and why to put it that way, and you know, a lot of different things to explore to build real usable muscle. My first hard copy book out in a couple of years, so yeah, that's brand new. And you can get digital copy immediately or the hard copy, so either one. Mm-hmm. And then also have two DVDs, but there'll be more in this series. There are 2 1-hour-long DVDs that you can order as a package or go with a book or whatever that talk about maximum functional mass. And one is the full whole body training, the other is arm training specifically. We actually have almost another full DVD on maximum functional mass done to explore. I mean, there's just so much to talk about and show. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only do so much at one time. And then actually right now we're offering for, you know, the whole Black Friday, Cyber Monday thing, we're offering a 20% off, as well as we have a special package where I have a 6 DVD set on isometric training.
Wow.
2 sets actually together, but it's 6 DVDs on isometric training where I talk about how to apply it and what, you know, what it is, why, what to do, and how to apply it for about 100 different possible situations, that, you know, depending on how you want to, if you want to move a particular lift or you want to build muscle or just all the different ways you can use it and why. And that's on special right now too. And then, you know, obviously there's going to be more stuff coming up, you know, as soon as we can get a breath and get done. Yeah.
You got any hints of what you're working on you want to give out?
Well, I got a Facebook series that I'm developing into a book right now called Enlightened Barbarianism.
Oh, nice. I've read that multiple times.
Yeah, and that's more of a man philosophy book, if you would. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you would say, that would be more right. How to live, if you ask me, a satisfied man's life in a modern world.
I got you.
The important things to think about, you know, the important processes. And then also we'll have another book very soon on crushing age, and it's going to be all about you know, training as you get after 40 and how to be amazing with that. That'll be a big one we'll be working on pretty much right away.
I'm not a big believer in chronological age anyway.
No, I don't. I think that's literally in your mind. It's literally what you...
Well, right. If nobody told you when you were born, would you even know what the hell you were?
No, you wouldn't. You'd have no
exactly.
Idea.
I mean,
no idea you'd have no idea that you were aging until you literally were so old that you wouldn't, we give up. We give up so easily on age because we hit a number and we think, well, this is what we're supposed to do. And that's all there is to it. But there are literally, I can't even count the number of examples. And this is just people I personally know.
Yeah.
Who are doing amazing things at ages you wouldn't believe, you know? Guys like Slim Farman, who at 79 years old was levering a pair of 25-pound hammers.
Jeez.
And, Dennis Rogers, who at 58, after shoulder surgery, is bending a wrench.
Yep.
And, you know, that's just a couple of the offhanded examples of the...
Well, your good friend there, Peter Wagner, nobody knows how old he really is, right?
Yeah, nobody really knows the truth, but I can tell you.
What do you think? What do you think?
Well, I don't even know what to say, to be honest with you. In adding up the chronology of his life, there's no way he's not into his late 70s.
No shit.
That's the minimum.
Yeah.
The potential is actually up to 90.
Wow.
And you're talking about a guy who at that age is squatting over 500 pounds.
Oh, my God. You know, it's just like when we talk about John Grimmick, too. It's like, man, you just got visions of how far you can go. You know that? And it's like the only thing that's really – unless something major happens to you, the only thing that's holding you down is you. And, you know, you always hear that stupid thing where they're going, well, it's the aging process. What? So I'm 40 now, right? I'm supposed to – grow the biggest gut I can get, hang out at some sports bar looking at a 20-year-old that I know I got no shot at, right? And drink beer that's full of estrogen, man, and go along with my life, right? That's the way it's supposed to be? Never, man. It's funny when you walk into places like that, which I don't frequent much anymore, but I do know people that still do, and you see most of the guys there, and it's like, wow, man, it's like, I'm glad I've been doing what I've been doing for the last few decades. You know what I mean? And I'm not sitting here slapping down pitchers of beer, and I look like I, you know, if I can get to the bathroom to take a leak, I'd be lucky, you know? That's not living, man. It's not living.
Yes, sir.
It's not what I want. So you got everything, bud?
I think we're good, man.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. They got some gems tonight, without a doubt, especially with the wall, you know, wall sitting with the squatting. I mean, that's like pearls right there with the whole show. They got a ton of info, but that's like the big gold nugget right there. I hope a lot of people will try that. So this is Eric Fiorello. This is for we're Motivation Muscle. We're the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Fiorello Barbell Company is our sponsor. That's the big cheese of the family. That's www.fiorellobarbellco.com. www.motivationandasanandmuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Rate us. Let us know how good we're doing. Tell some people that if there's something you'd like Bud and I to talk about, you can get a hold of me at fiorellobarbell@nicap.rr.com. Facebook, Fiorello Barbell. Also, Motivation and Muscle. On Twitter, we're at Fiorello Eric. And I think that's it. We're going to have a lot of stuff coming up for the new year, too. I want to thank everybody for listening. And I don't remember if I told you or not, but one of the guys that's a devoted listener, Herman from Germany, purchased Maximum Functional Mass. He sent me an email. So he was talking it up big time. So Herman's a great guy. He's a real loyal listener. And I helped him out. I set him up. He's just started lifting stones too. So I gave him an abbreviated routine to go in with some other stuff prior to, you know, him ordering, the MP4. So, I'm glad that, you know, he got something, could help you out a little bit. And, you know, hopefully I get emails from usually every other week with something. You know, I'm glad we could help him out.
Good, good. I'm glad anybody this helps, man. That's the whole point of doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like we talked about, you know, off air, this is why we're in this. This is why this show's here. We just want to spread this message like wildfire and get it out to the masses. So that's the deal. So, Bud, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate your support very much.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
So for Bud Jeffries, this is Eric Fiorello. You know, we'll be on 2 weeks again. Tune in. And have a great week. And thank you for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.